This episode is brought to you by Puttercup. More than a training aid, it's a skill enhancer. Visit puttercupgolf.com and use the code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. Now, let me explain. We've discussed many training aids on this podcast, and frankly, there have been a lot that have crossed my desk that you never heard me talk about, either because I didn't get it or I thought it wasn't worth your time. But Puttercup is different. After nearly 20 years in the market research industry, Matt Davis, a lifelong golf nut like all of us, had an idea on how he could help every golfer feel more calm and confident when they putt. This isn't a device to improve your mechanics or develop the perfect stroke. Puttercup is designed to strengthen your focus and reduce distracting thoughts while you're putting. How? Puttercups are golf hole inserts that encourage golfers to focus on the putting essentials of speed and aim. They're lightweight and easily fit into your bag so you can fine-tune your focus before every round and at every practice session. Puttercup gives you instant feedback, so it's easy to get dialed in quickly and feel confident as you head to the first tee. You've got to check it out for yourself. Go to puttercupgolf.com and use code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. And combined with the 15% discount you get with the Pressure Putt Combo, you really save. And the Pressure Putt Combo includes both the Speed Bump and the Center Cup, two very different but very valuable skill enhancers. That's puttercupgolf.com and get 20% off your next order with promo code GOLFSMARTER. This episode is brought to you by Indeed, a company driven by the search for better. Because when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search, but to match. Think about the time and energy you've put into finding the best candidate for an opening you have. But it's more than finding someone. You want to match all the candidates to your needs. So ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with the right candidates faster. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. And Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And here's how to get your openings more visibility. Because you're a Golf Smarter listener, you get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. So go to Indeed.com/GolfSmarter right now and let them know that you heard about Indeed here. That's Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
Some brands offer you low finance, or cashback, or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar, with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.
Golf Smarter, number 653. You know the yips never happen without a ball. The root causes and fixes for the yips with Jim Waldron.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jim.
Thank you, Fred. Great to be back again. I think 23rd or 24th time, something like that.
Episode 650-something, and you've probably been on 620 episodes. I don't know. It seems like we talk a lot, but it also confirms why I get so many emails about what you say, because you're so good at breaking it down and making it easy and pointing out things that we think are obvious, but they're not. And all of a sudden when you share it with us, it's like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
Cool. So,
yeah. Yeah.
What do you think for today? More on mental game and yips?
I love, you are the yips guy. I love talking about the yips and getting a better understanding of it. It doesn't have to be like a Tourette's type physical yips, right?
Correct.
And that's
it can be pretty subtle.
Yeah. Well, let's define yips first. Okay. Well, no, but before we do that, let's get a brief update of how your season's been and where you have been giving lessons.
Same place, Quail Valley Golf Course, where you were at with me about, 5 years ago?
At least.
When we did my dinner with Waldron.
Right. Episode number 400.
Yeah, I've been there for, this is my 24th season in a row there.
Wow.
And then at Ko'olina on the island of Oahu in the wintertime.
Beautiful. I'm
kind of a guest instructor there. It's interesting. That's a good segue because this is going to be the first year in my 25 years of being a golf teaching professional where I'll actually have more income by the end of this year if this trend continues from folks with the yips than even conventional students.
Really? You track that kind of like, person has yips. This person's a mental problem. This person can't swing a club. What are your categories of keeping track?
Well, it's self-identified. People call me up and they say, I want to come out to Portland and work with you. I've got severe full swing yips or severe putting yips or short game, whatever. Including a few tour pros that I've been working with in the last year, and it's just taken off. Mainly, I think from word of mouth, but. It's been pretty interesting. So mainly I've been doing that. I mean, I think it's going to be turn out to be about 60% of my income from the year is going to be from yips or associated mental game instruction. Mm. And then the other 40% from conventional teaching.
I think it's
bizarre.
Fascinating that you say that you've been working with tour players who have the yips.
It's more common than you think.
About, well, if they're on the tour, they must just have an amazing game and they can only get beaten by two or three strokes on a regular basis, but they struggle with that too, huh?
Yes. In fact, it's becoming more and more common. It's to the point where it's almost like an epidemic for better players, especially. In fact, I've been keeping track of my stats for the last 5 years of my YIP students. And right now about 80% of my YIP students are single digit handicaps.
Wow.
And the bulk of those are five index or better, including a bunch of +1, +2, +3 handicaps.
That just blows my mind.
I know.
I don't even know what to ask on this one, but it's like, what are the different yip afflictions that tour players that or just people with a 5 or lower handicap? Where does it manifest itself on the course?
Well, it's more common for, if I had to pick the most common category of the main categories, which are full swing yips, short game yips, putting yips, it's more common for better players to have short game yips for sure. Although I still do quite a few of those guys and gals who have full swing yips. Interestingly enough, very few have putting yips. Most of my putting yip students tend to be like 6 handicaps to maybe 20 handicaps.
And that's what I was going to talk about. That's what I wanted to know about.
Yips are epidemic. I mean, you can't believe how common it is. And part of it's because right now on all the tours, both the mini tours and the regular tours, and you've probably seen this, particularly in U.S. Open courses, but to some extent, even British Open and Masters, they have these what they call closely shaved chipping areas around the green,
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, the grass is not that much taller than the putting surface grass. So it's almost like you're chipping off the putting surface, right? And that particular shot requires really, really, really good technique to pull off. It's really easy to especially easy to chunk it, to hit it fat, because the leading edge of your sand wedge or your lob wedge will dig into that closely milled grass. Or you overcompensate and you thin it and you can scull it over the green. So
mm-hmm.
that particular shot is driving these guys crazy. And that's sometimes where it starts. But once you have a significant loss of confidence in what you're doing, any shot, that's when the yips tend to show up.
I've noticed recently that my knees start to buckle when my ball's sitting on hard pan. I mean, when
that would be
dried out.
Yeah.
Dried out area, it's like, I just can't hit this. And I stand over it, and gee, what happens? I don't hit it well. Is that is that the yips?
No, not necessarily.
That's just being a bad golfer.
I'll give you the definition for it, right? Because a yip is different than a bad shot, although those two things are often conflated in sort of contemporary golf culture, particularly in internet golf land. There's a lot of discussion about the yips, and most of it is ridiculously, you know, off base, because people ascribe it as bad mechanics, which is ridiculous. I mean, the yip itself is 100%. The yip impulse is 100% mental / neurological. It's not mechanical at all, by definition. But it creates terrible mechanics. So all it is basically it's a reaction to fear or anxiety or loss of confidence. And the way the body and the mind reacts is the body tightens up. One or more muscles will very, very quickly tighten up or spasm, and sometimes quite severely. And that muscle spasm is the actual manifestation of the yip impulse in the golfer's body. And it's 100% involuntary. But it does lie on a spectrum, what I call the flinch spectrum. Think of a scale from 1 to 10. Have you ever seen Barclay's yip?
Yeah.
That's a 10. Sir Charles' yip is a 10.
He just kind of freezes on his way down, right? He just kind of like...
He has a two-stage yip. He freezes on at the top, then he goes halfway down, what we call position 6 or the get-set position, where his hands are about waist high, and he freezes there. So he has a two-stage yip.
Wasn't there a TV show dedicated? Wasn't there a whole TV episode or show dedicated to working on him doing that?
Yeah, that was the Haney Project, and it was a total failure, unfortunately for Charles.
Wait. The Haney Project was a failure, or Charles working with Haney was a failure?
Yeah, it was the first episode. I think they did like 7 or 8 celebrities over about a 3-year period in that show on the Golf Channel, sort of like a reality TV show.
Sure.
But the first one was with Charles, and it was a complete failure. And I think it was mainly a complete failure because it was the wrong diagnosis. I mean, except for maybe 20% of that show was devoted to the mental aspect. The other 80% was I think, incorrect diagnosis as a purely mechanical issue, which it's not. The yip never happens without a ball. In other words, you can have someone take 100 swings, perfect, where their club head starts out, like, you know, three or 4 inches away from the ball, and they won't yip. And as soon as they step forward the 3 inches and put the club behind the ball, then the yip manifests.
Wow.
So it's literally a reaction of the mind and body of the golfer to the presence of the ball that they're about to strike. And, you know, the reason for that is the ball is symbolic. It's a symbolic representation of the possibility of catastrophic failure. And so what the yip is your mind's, your psyche's reaction to this impending catastrophe that you're trying to somehow avert or protect yourself from.
I've always felt that golf, like life, was just a series of disasters, and it's how you handle it.
I think that's a Mark Twain quote in there somewhere, but yeah.
He was a 6 handicap, wasn't he?
Something like that, yeah. But that's literally what it is. So what I do is, it's sort of the Yips Cure program that I've created. It deals with, you know, there's 4 root causes for the yips. And the program I've developed, particularly if you come to work with me in person, addresses all 4 issues. Now, number 1 is complete loss of confidence. I'll give you an example. I worked with a guy who had severe putting yips last week at Quail Valley in Portland. And like most of my yip students, he can identify the actual date and time that the yip started.
Ugh.
And for him, it was 5 years ago. I forget the name of the golf course. It was somewhere here in the West Coast. And he told me, he goes, it was 1:30 on a Wednesday on July 2nd, 5 years ago.
Wow.
And I was putting on, you know, like the 12th green, whatever it was. And I, and my right wrist just locked up in the middle of my forward stroke. And I putted the ball off the green, like 50 yards down the fairway.
Oh, my God.
And that's, most of my YIPS students will tell me that they can identify the place and the time that the YIPS first started. And then the next green, then the 13th green, it happened again. And so if you look at someone who has severe YIPS, it looks identical to someone who has Parkinson's disease. It literally is a sudden spasm in one or more body parts, typically in the arms, the wrists, the forearms, and the fingers.
And,
although it could happen any part of the body.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and okay, so it happens on one green. He noticed it and is like, oh, that was weird. Then he goes to the next green and it happens again. And now he can't stop thinking about it for the rest of the round. So it just kind of explodes
right on
him?
It explodes partly because, or even primarily because, once you have them, and your fear grows pretty strongly that you're going to yip the next one, the very fact that you're thinking about the possibility of the yips happening again triggers the yip impulse. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is interesting, isn't it? So, you know, 20 years ago, I was giving a new yip student my morning kind of lecture. We had the whole day to work together in the clubhouse at Quail Valley, and one of my longtime assistants was sitting across from us, who in the real world, when he's not helping me do golf schools, he's a speech pathologist. And I was explaining to the YIP student that, which I tell everybody, even today, it's the same protocol, the worst thing you can do is try not to YIP, because it actually triggers the YIP. He said, we have a saying in the speech pathology community that stuttering is what stutterers do when they try not to stutter, which is interesting.
Very.
So when someone's stuttering, they sense they're about to stutter, and they try to help out or try to inhibit the stutter. And the very effort to try to inhibit the stutter creates the stutter. And that's why so many golfers with the yips, they try everything, and everything they do not only doesn't help, it makes it worse. Right? But because it makes it worse, they try even harder.
Yeah.
Well, if that didn't work, I'll do that strategy 10 times more, which of course makes the yips 10 times stronger. So part of my YIPS cure program is to get people to understand that the worst thing you can do is to try not to YIP.
Wow.
And I mean try emotionally. Try to if you have any emotional intensity behind your effort to try to do something to prevent the YIP, it will actually trigger the YIP.
Is it possible?
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, this is fascinating, and I can't wait to hear the next three, but is it possible to recognize what happened immediately and then just go, okay, just block that out. Forget, you know, that just kind of just feeds right into what you said, is trying to do it.
Yeah, that's kind of what you have to do. You have to basically, the mindset you have to have is, and I ask all my YIP students to adopt this for, I have to make a contract with themselves and depends on, you know, what level of intensity and frequency. So it's either a 1 month contract for a mild yipper and a 3 month contract for a moderate on the scale, and 6 months for severe. And then during that contract period, they're actually doing all the drills and exercises, the protocol of the entire YIPS cure program. But they give themselves permission to let the YIP happen because of the principle we just mentioned. Because if they're in a panic mode and they're trying not to YIP, that actually triggers the YIP. So basically we're teaching them how to avoid the triggers for the YIP impulse.
Amazing. Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back because I want to go over the next three items that are the root causes of the yips.
Some brands offer you low finance or cash back or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cash back and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required. Subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.
All right, Jim. I don't know if, in fact, we have covered everything we need to on the loss of confidence, which would be your first root cause of the yips, and that you have four. Is it time to move on to number two, or are we still on loss of confidence?
Let me just go just a couple of minutes on the we call it the emotional cause, which is loss of confidence, anxiety, or just plain old fear, right?
Right.
But the cure is, there's several cures that are somewhat unconventional. The main one is I've adapted the Stanislavski method acting technique to teach my students, including non-yipsters, just people who want metal game instruction, how to use method acting techniques to change their emotional state from a negative to a positive. Are you familiar with method acting?
I've heard of it. I've never practiced it.
Well, I'll tell you what I tell my YIP students, because this is key to, again, just to everything in golf, is in terms of the mental game, not just for YIPs people. But to play your best golf, you need to be in a state of what Hogan called rock solid confidence, right?
Yeah.
And if you have little or no confidence, there's a pretty strong likelihood you're going to flinch. And a flinch is just a mild intensity yip, right? But when you're confident, basically your body doesn't flinch. And because it doesn't flinch, you have better impact, which creates a better shot outcome. But method acting is the premier method or style of acting that's been around since in the United States in late, I think, 1947. There's a school you can attend called the Actor's Studio in Manhattan.
Sure.
And in that school, they teach the students how to have ultimate control over their mental and especially their emotional state. And so what I explain to my YIPs people is, I go, there's a person alive on the planet who has ultimate control over her emotional state. And they go, what are you talking about? I go, well, there's this person who makes her living in front of the camera as an actress. And I'm talking about Meryl Streep, who's by her fellow actors is considered to be like Einstein, like she's held on a pedestal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although almost all the top actors, movie actors in the world today, at least American movie actors, are graduates of this school called the Actor's Studio. And they teach you how to change your state from whatever state you're in at the moment to, you can be angry, you can be sad, you can experience grief, you can experience intense joy. And people go, yeah, but that's acting. And I go, well, it's only acting if you suck at acting. If you're good at it, it's completely real to the person, right?
Yeah.
And I give the example, when Meryl Streep plays the role of a mother who loses a child or something in a car accident, and she's got to stop being the Meryl Streep that her husband knows, she has to step in front of the camera and fall down the ground crying hysterically. She's so good at it that the crew starts crying around her when she's doing the performance, right? So this is based on what's called in modern psychotherapy the as-if principle. And the as-if principle basically means all emotions are self-created states of mind or consciousness that your brain creates for yourself. And the only difference between a quote-unquote fake emotion, like an actor does, and a quote-unquote real emotion, like someone who's not acting experiences, the non-actor emotion has an external trigger, a trigger external to the person, whereas an actor has an internal trigger. They choose to experience this emotion, right? And so that's what I teach my yipsters and my non-yipster golf students, how to actually replace fear with 100% confidence.
I love that you call them yipsters. I think if they're from our generation, they should be called yippies.
They're yippies, yeah.
They're yippies.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
For those of you too young to remember, that's a reference to a left-wing political group who indulged in guerrilla theater. And it was created by Abbie Hoffman and Jerry Rubin, who were big anti-war protesters back in the 60s.
The Merry Hipsters.
Yeah, Merry Pranksters.
Merry Pranksters, that's what it was.
Merry Pranksters, yeah. That's, what's his name, Peter Coyote. He was one of the head people in that tribe.
Who I bumped into in the parking lot. No, in the I was buying birdseed. And he was in there.
Really?
I'm like, what?
And Peter Coyote was in
Peter
there.
Peter Coyote was
in
there.
Ken Kesey.
No, he was not there, but Peter Coyote was. He was hilarious. Yeah. I said, wow, I just listened to a podcast with you talking about yourself, and goes, was I coherent?
Okay, enough of him.
Yeah.
All right. So all now,
the second cause.
Second cause. Number two.
Second cause is how you use your awareness or your mental focus or lack thereof. And it's very common for someone with the yips to have a mind in complete and utter chaos, more so than the average sort of mental chaos that a golfer with non-yips will experience in a round of golf.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, I'll give you an example. One of my tour pros who had full swing yips told me, he goes, Jim, anytime I know I have to chip. He said, like for instance, I'm 215 yards out on a long par four, and I miss hit my 3-iron slightly, so the ball ends up just off the putting surface, and I have to walk 215 yards knowing the next shot has to be a chip.
Mm.
He goes, I have a couple of minutes during that 200-yard walk to work myself into a mental state of complete chaos because I know I have to chip this. But I know I have the chipping yips, so I know I can't, you know, for whatever reason, I know I can't putt it, right? Maybe there's a sprinkler head in the way or something. Maybe the grass is too long to putt, and he knows it from the minute he finishes this 3-iron swing, he has to chip. So he has 2 or 3 minutes to build up this state of, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to chip this. What if I yip it, right? And similar to method acting, there are techniques that I teach people that allow you to control your mental process so that doesn't happen, so you can stay calm and cool and collected. And it has to do with understanding sort of the nature of consciousness and how your mind works and recognizing that your mind is a tool, like your body's a tool, like the golf club is a tool, like the ball's a tool that we play the game with. And the basic terminology in modern neuroscience for this particular aspect of consciousness is called meta-awareness. Meta is the Greek for above or transcendent. And the literal definition is the ability of the mind to notice what the mind is doing.
Hmm.
And when you have meta awareness, there's the possibility that you have, that you can change your state. Whereas when you lack meta awareness, when you're in what I call normal awareness, you're sort of stuck with what you have. So if your normal awareness mind is in chaos, you're going to stay in chaos until you walk up to the shot and then yip it again. Mm. So it's all about, can you sort of observe and notice, kind of like, a good example is Mr. Spock in Star Trek, right? Mr. Spock, in the following scenario, we've all watched Star Trek and seen this, the warp drive's about to explode. So he'll say, Captain, the warp drive is about to explode, and everybody on board will die. Fascinating, right? Pure observational awareness. Whereas Dr. McCoy will go, oh my God, Jim, the warp drive is about to explode. We're all going to die. That's normal consciousness, Dr. McCoy. So I want my students to be like Spock, not McCoy, right? And there are techniques you can learn to allow you to do that.
But, you know, we all try to keep our emotions in check on the course because, you know, you eventually learn if things are going well, that it can turn around in a heartbeat. And so I think that,
yep.
I remember when I was just starting to play golf and I was traveling someplace and I was playing and they teamed me up with some guy who was out there and he was on a minor tour, but he was just getting ready for a round at that course for this minor tour. And I was just amazed at how nonplussed he was the entire time. I'll never forget this. He was just kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah. And I'm like, I was getting nuts.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And he just, yeah. I was like, wow, you just made this amazing shot. And it's like, yeah, so.
Yeah, I love it. That's the state you want to be in for sure.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I guess.
There's a great Ben Hogan story about that. Hogan was asked in the last interview he gave about 10 years before he died, I think it was the Golf Digest, and the interviewer asked him, Ben, can you tell us the difference between your mental approach toward the end of your pre-shot routine when you're getting ready to pull the trigger and start your takeaway? What's going through your mind versus what's going through the mind of those typically high handicap corporate CEOs who pay all the money to play with you guys on the Wednesday pro-ams, right? And he thought for a minute, and he said, the difference is those guys add themselves emotionally to the shot-making process as they get closer and closer to hitting the ball. He said, I remove myself emotionally from the shot-making process.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's interesting?
That's fascinating. It makes me think, should we not refer to it as the mental game, but refer to it as the emotional game?
No, because the emotions are just one part of it. I mean, so emotions are just one way you use consciousness or awareness, but there's also just purely non-emotional use of the mind. Like, you know, you can just have a thought without having an emotion attached to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the emotions are, you know, there's almost nobody, besides me and a few other people, there's hardly anybody else in golf teaching their students how to control their emotions. It just isn't, it's almost never discussed even,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So it's pretty important. So the attitude that I like to see, I call it the warrior ethos. It's like, you know, Sitting Bull, the night before the battle of Little Bighorn, you know, Custer's last stand. I use this example a lot in my teaching. He gave a lecture to, I forgot how many, there were several thousand warriors from like six different Plains Indians tribes at 4 a.m. around a huge bonfire. You know, they were like 5 miles away from where the U.S. cavalry was with Custer. And they knew they were going to attack at daylight. And he said, "My warrior brothers, today is a good day to die," which is a really cool kind of mindset to be in when you're playing golf, because even for tour pros find the game hard. They don't think it's easy. And they know they're only one swing away from utter catastrophe, utter disaster, right? So anytime a human being is in a situation, and I use the warrior ethos for a reason, because there's over 1,000 years of Asian martial arts tradition behind this, right? Including many, many books written about what's the proper mindset to go into battle if you're a samurai warrior, right? And I think that's the same mindset you want to be if you want to play your best golf. You have to walk up to a golf shot knowing that you could shank it out of bounds, right? Or you could hole it out. It could be either of those two extremes. And most, again, 99% of the time, it's somewhere in the middle. But it's almost like you have to walk up to a golf shot with your mind so at peace with itself, because you've accepted the possibility of utter failure early in the pre-shot routine. And you've learned some of these state control techniques that I teach people that allows you to perform at your best, right?
But there's got to be a difference between accepting failure as a possibility and, "I always hit the ball in the water here."
Yeah, that's interesting. That's what I call the myth of emotional momentum, which is another aspect of modern psychotherapy that the general public has never heard of. The idea that you tripled the first three holes and therefore it's going to be a bad day for me, and because I tripled the first three holes, the round is over, is really, really common in golf.
And oh, yeah.
The myth is that because something bad happened in the past, it affects, and I'm talking on the emotional level, not the physical level, it's therefore happening now in the present. And of course, that's just simply not the case. The only reason you even know that you tripled the last three holes is because we have something called memory, right? But in the physical world, the world that science studies, things happen in the present moment. They don't happen in the past, and they don't happen in the future. Everything's happening right now at this moment in time. And being in the present moment and dealing with the present moment is a big, huge part of the mental game of golf, including how to help people overcome the yips. So no, there's no such thing as emotional momentum. There's bad luck. Certainly that can happen. Your ball will take a, you know, one day your ball will bounce out of bounds, and the next day it'll hit a sprinkler head and bounce forward 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's real. Bad luck and good luck can happen. But the fact that you had X number of bad holes prior in the round, having some emotional momentum that's going to cause you to hit a bad shot now, is basically a myth.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot too. When people in the second hole, they're like, "Oh boy, it's going to be a long day." And my attitude is, "Oh, that's out of the way. Now let's get better." You know, the crap is done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's just the awareness part of this and the mental focus part means understanding that you're playing in the present moment. The past is a non-issue. The future's a non-issue. I have to make this shot now, and I have to go through my routine, which is the third root cause. People who tend to yip, or people who yip, tend to have either no pre-shot routine or very poorly functioning pre-shot routine, including what we call an automatic trigger, which is how you start your takeaway should be something that doesn't require any conscious thought. So you start your takeaway the same way, the same moment in time during the shot making routine every single time, because it's just that point in time has been reached. Now it's time to start. So you start, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people who have the yips or people who just have poor mental games in general, they take differing amounts of time over the ball before they trigger their takeaway, because they're trying to decide, should I start now? Should I start now? Okay. When I demonstrate this with a student, I look at my watch. I go, oh, I think it's time to start. So, no, obviously, you want it to be automatic, right? You want it to be automatic. And that having a consistent, effective pre-shot routine helps take away some of the perceived stress or pressure from the situation, right?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan
and
of
then
the pre-shot routine.
The fourth cause is, so do you think you have one?
Do I have a pre-shot routine?
Yeah.
Oh,
do it the same way every time?
I really try to, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm always, and to me, it's like when I'm standing behind the ball, lock in everything that I want to do or when I think about or the one thought or the two thoughts or how many, and then just walk up to the ball and hit it. Is part of that routine. Yeah, I'm pretty methodical about that and disciplined about that pre-shot routine. I'm a big fan of that.
And part of that relates to back to the second thing having to do with mental focus. I teach that you should have a single focal point for your mind to engage itself with during the actual swing. So once you start the swing by triggering your takeaway with that automatic trigger, your mind is only paying attention to one thing, and it could be the target picture in your mind's eye. It could be grip pressure and feel. It could be sensing balance in your feet. It could be sensing tempo or rhythm, right? But whatever it is, you put your mind 100% on just that one thing in an extremely narrow mode. Think of a laser pointer, really, really super narrow. And because it's super narrow, you block out all the negative thoughts and emotions, the so-called demons, which could trigger a yip or even just a bad shot for a non-yipster, right?
Yeah.
But when your mind is on wide mode or even super wide mode, that's when we start to perceive the environment as a potential threat. In other words, the water becomes a threat, the bunkers become a threat, the trees become a threat, and then our body reacts to the threat with some form of a flinch or a yip.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't perceive that threat to begin with, you're not going to trigger the yip.
Well, let me ask you this. Swing thoughts or game thoughts, is there a limit to how many you should have during a round? Should you try to just keep it at one thought for the whole round or two thoughts at best? What would you suggest?
Yeah, what I teach is that you're going to have a list of at least five proven effective focal points. I teach people what they are. It takes a few hours to do it because there's four categories. And there's several focal points within each category. I think the total number is something like 35. That have won on the professional tour. So you go through over several hours, you test, and you find out, okay, that one doesn't work. This one works really well. That one works okay. That one definitely doesn't work. And at the end of several hours of testing, you have five or six that work pretty well in order. So let's say grip pressure works the best for all your long game shots, and you play golf the next day, and it just isn't working. And I tell people, give it a minimum of three holes and only switch to sort of plan B, your number two on the list, when you leave the third green. You walk up to the fourth tee. Just go, okay, I gave it three holes, and I just can't get my mind to focus on grip pressure today.
Hmm.
Or my mind's focusing on the grip pressure, but for some reason I can still tell I'm flinching a little bit, right? So in my system on the mental game in general, it's all about how to flinch-proof your swing and stroke. In other words, the idea is don't use your mind in any way that tends to trigger a flinch of any kind. Remember, a flinch is just a mild intensity yip.
Mm-hmm.
In my view is that almost all 99.9% of golfers are flinching on pretty much every shot.
Wow.
Which they don't do. They wouldn't do if I said, okay, you just hit your second tee shot in the water. Let's stop playing golf for score. And for the rest of the round, I'll just drop a ball here or there and have you see if you can hit it. And we'll just stop playing for score. We'll stop playing by the rules. As soon as you take that kind of pressure off, all of a sudden people stop flinching.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So people flinch because there's something on the line that matters to them, right?
Yeah, we call that second swing All-American.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's why the mulligans always go better than the first shot.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. It's off. Like, pressure's off. Okay, yeah, I'll just, and boom.
Yeah. So it's possible to be in that pressure's off state of mind when you play golf and on the first swing. It's possible to achieve that state.
Right.
Especially if you recognize the as-if principle we talked about a minute ago. If you realize that I have way more control over my internal state than I used to think I had, and I can act as if I don't give a damn about the outcome of the shot or the outcome of my score for the day, even though you're acting in the early stages, right? Eventually, you start to believe, you know what? I don't really care about my score. I started out as an acting project 6 months ago, but now I really don't care, right? And if you didn't care about your score, everybody would shoot probably their career or close to their career low round.
Sure. That's why it's like the worst possible thing you can do is keep your eye on your scorecard, right? I mean, especially when you're going into the 18th going, all I need here is a par and I can break,
right,
pick your number, right? And it never works.
Yeah,
you never do.
Your mind went into the future.
Yep.
The whole point of all this is to stay in the present moment. Don't go into the future and don't go into the past. And that's, there's other aspects of this, the number two cause, you know, the awareness, mental focus part. But that's a big, big part of it, staying in the present moment.
Yeah.
As soon as you're in the past or in the future, you don't have any meta-awareness. You can only be meta-aware of what is. And what is happening, reality is happening in the moment right in front of your nose.
Right. Yeah, right? We've talked about this.
And again, this is a principle
times.
That's...
It's the process, principle. Not the outcome.
Correct. But the issue for golfers is, in our culture, the way the culture evolved over time, most people spend the bulk of their time in a kind of dream state where they're focusing on memories of the past or they're fantasizing or hoping about the future. And the vast majority of human beings do not spend the bulk of their day in the present moment. You know, they are if they're Buddhist monks. But if they're just ordinary people with no training in this kind of stuff, they easily go back into the past or forward into the future, and they miss what's happening right in front of them.
Hmm. I was asking about the number of swing thoughts because there's a new product that crossed my desk recently, which you may get a kick out of, and you may think it's ridiculous, but I'm enjoying it. It's called Shoe Tips. Shoe Tips. At ShoeTips.com, and Golf Smarter listeners get 25% off when you use the coupon code, the checkout code Golf Smarter.
Okay.
But what they do is they're little tags that you can put down on your shoes, one on each foot, and they hook up to your shoelaces.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And they hook up to your shoelaces. And like I'm holding one now here. Here are the different tags that you can put on. So you only have two thoughts to focus on in that round or, you know, when you're doing it. So when you step up to the...
Sort of a reminder, kind of.
Right. When you step up to the ball, you looked at... I was like, oh, okay, I got to remember to do this. So here's some of them. Back and through. Breathe. Focus. Stay down. That's a big one for me. Impact. Commit trust. Soft hands. Tempo. Finish. Right? Hit down. So it's all these little things. And
so
on
reminders.
The, yeah. And on the back of them, you can handwrite the ones that you want. If none of these work for you, you can just write it and put it down. So, yeah. So, of course, last time I was wearing them and I went out with a bunch of guys that I don't regularly play with, and I went out and played, and they're like, what is that on your shoe? Fred, you have the goofiest stuff. I'm like, okay, let's talk about the score after the round when you think I'm so goofy, right? My mental game's better than yours.
Yeah.
Shoe tips.
What I have people do is sort of a light version, Fred. I have people write down their focal points on their scorecards. Every time they write down their number after they leave the green, they look at their, it'll say like SG for short game. It'll say target picture.
Yeah.
Or it'll say LG for long game, rhythm. So they always have a reminder every time they write down their score. It's basically the same idea without having to look ugly, without having to have ugly shoes, basically.
Well, and you can also have, there's a, in the package is a bag tag, and you can just put it on your bag tag too. So you can do it that way. So you don't have to put them on your shoes and have your friends make fun of you.
Yeah.
Or worse,
the trick
children.
Is to remember what the focal, when I do playing lessons with people and I say, can I ask you once in a while if you remembered to keep your focal point? Everybody says, yes, of course.
Of course.
I don't do it every swing, but after maybe, a hole or two, I'll say the guy's name is Bill. I say, so Bill, in the last two holes, you were supposed to use grip pressure for your long game focal point for your mind. Did you do that in all the long game shots? You know what the typical will say? Oh, I completely forgot.
Yep.
Literally forgot to do the focal point. It's that easy for your mind to wander. Remember, in normal consciousness, the nature of normal consciousness is to have what's called in Buddhism a wandering mind, a mind that lacks focus. Mm. And so part of the YIPS program is to teach people how to have a very, very narrowly focused mind on just one thing. And what that does is it blocks, because their mind's in narrow mode, it blocks any negative thought and emotion coming into the consciousness in the first place that could trigger a YIP. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of the program. Hmm. And that's one reason it's so effective. Most people come to see me don't YIP during the day or two we spend together, and then they don't YIP afterwards. It's completely gone.
That's amazing.
It's about 90% right now, achieved total elimination. The other 10% will see a reduction in both the intensity and frequency of about 50 to 75%. So they're still happy because they're yipping a little bit, but way better than way less than they used to. Mm-hmm. But again, in the short term, when they're together with me, after every swing, I ask them, where was your mind? Where were you focused? Or were you focused? And in the early stages, people go, I don't know. My mind just sort of wandered off. I was thinking about what we're going to have for lunch in 2 hours. Stuff like that, right? And I go, okay, try harder on this next one. Try harder, not emotionally, back to Hogan, but mentally. Try to focus more strongly on just this one thing. Again, back to grip pressure. Let's say it's grip pressure. And all of a sudden, they'll hit two or three good shots in a row. They go, oh, yeah, my mind was 100% on my grip pressure, and I wasn't aware of anything else. Wow. And that's the state you want to be in.
Sure. All right, so let's go to the fourth root cause of the YIPS.
The fourth root cause, this is actually the original cause for the YIPS, and I've seen no exceptions. People get the YIPS because they have one or more fatal swing flaws or stroke flaws that over time, and the amount of time could literally be 10 years or longer, they hit X number of really bad shots because of this one or more physical flaws. Every time they hit a bad shot, I call it the confidence pool. They've got a swimming pool with water representing the amount of confidence in their psyche. And it's 10 feet deep when they first start playing golf. Every time they hit a bad shot due to this physical flaw, the pool loses water by, say, a half inch. So it takes time, but eventually there's only a half inch of water in the bottom of the pool. They hit another bad shot due to the physical flaw, and then the next swing they take is when the YIP shows up.
Mm.
So fixing the flaw is part of the program. And it has an inhibitory effect on the YIP impulse, partly because it's new, because you're changing something. Like I'll have people slightly strengthen or weaken their grip. I'm talking like an eighth of an inch of movement of the hand on the handle. Or I'll have them maybe slightly increase or decrease their knee flex at setup. So I'm always doing some things I would do with a non-YIPster student, just because I think it's the right way to do it based on my 25 years of teaching mechanics. So there are mechanical changes that we recommend people do that not only improve the quality of the strike, of the impact, because it's just better mechanics, better geometry, better physics, but also psychologically, the person standing over the shot about to pull the trigger and start their takeaway, and their grip feels a little different, and their setup feels a little different, right? And because it feels different, there's never been a YIP associated with this different feeling setup. So that alone tends to inhibit the YIP impulse. Now, when you add all four together, you replace fear with confidence. You take a wandering mind and turn it into a narrowly focused mind on a proven effective focal point. And you got a professional-level pre-shot routine to help reduce some of the stress of the shot-making process. And you've got better mechanics. It's like the YIP impulse has no choice. It basically gives up. It surrenders. Think of it like that.
Wow. That's phenomenal. That's amazing. And this is the kind of help that you have so graciously offered to give away to one of our Golf Smarter listeners, right? And then let's talk about that for a moment of what you've offered.
Sure. If I remember right, it's been a while since we talked about it. I think it's a 1 hour remote lesson, which we do on Skype, on webcam. So you can be anywhere in the world. I do like a dozen of these a week.
Oh, okay.
For people all over the world, both YIPsters and non-YIPsters. Yeah, so what they'll do is whoever takes this offer up will get a 1 hour less with me, they're going to send me some video in advance so I can analyze their swing or their stroke. And then after my analysis, we sit down over the webcam and go over my results and basically come up with a practice plan to address the issue.
Awesome. That's a great one. And that's what I'm loving about being able to offer this from various teachers. And because especially like someone like you who specializes in something, that it makes it so valuable. But only one person can win that. So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you because you've really connected with them on this conversation, what's the best way to get in touch with you to have you work with them wherever they live?
My website is balancepointgolf.com.
Right.
That's the best way.
That's the best way. And there's ways to contact you via the website?
Yeah. You could email or you can phone, either one.
Okay. Well, Jim Waldron, dinner's over. Lunch is over this time. Another fine meal,
Fred,
with Jim Waldron.
We have to keep doing this.
I know. Jimmy, I intend to keep doing this, and I hope I'm so grateful that you answer the phone. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Fred, it's great to be with you again, and yeah, let's do many more in the future.
Yips. Any of it sound familiar to you? Do you recognize any of what Jim's talking about in your game? Well, if so, then you heard his offer of a free 1 hour live video chat lesson, which is going to be next week's prize. To enter for our random weekly drawing, go to golfsmarter.com/giveaway and sign up before Sunday, midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern, to be eligible to win an hour with Jim Waldron. And remember, if you've already registered, then you're in for every prize we're offering through the end of 2018. And if you've already won, don't be discouraged about missing out on winning other great prizes like the customized high heat fairway driver or a Seymour putter, because you are still eligible. Registration, rules, upcoming and previous prizes, plus the winners are all there at golfsmarter.com/giveaway. Now, before I announce this week's winner, I want to share an email I received from last week's winner of the 8 Traits of Champion Golf Assessment and Review from John Stabler of GolfPsych.com, who was featured on episode number 649. The winner was Wayne Mills of Lindell Beach in British Columbia, Canada, who, after receiving his congratulatory letter, wrote back to me and said, "This is great news! I've been listening for a number of years, and I really appreciate your approach. Many of your episodes have been really helpful. I played in a few senior amateur events this year, including the BC Senior Amateur, the Provincial Golf Association Senior Championship. I have a 5.5 Golf Canada handicap. I'm not sure what the difference is, but when I play in events, I always score higher. I know tournaments usually can cause stress and therefore higher scores, so I'm very pleased to have John walk me through the traits and my assessment. When I was younger, I played a high level of hockey and baseball, but golf has a whole different psychological requirement. Looking forward to this experience. Thanks again." Thank you, Wayne, and please keep us posted on your assessment and your progress. And now let's wish a congratulations to Golf Smarter listener Heidi Zankowski of Christiana, Pennsylvania. Heidi, you've won a live remote coaching session with Catherine Roberts of Yoga for Golfers. Congratulations. I do have some big news for listeners who are Android users. I've been waiting for this a long time, and I'm sure that you have too, because there's so many different podcast apps out there that are kind of inconsistent, not great. And we used to have a Golf Smarter app, but that's all gone. So if you are an Android user, check this out. Google has finally come out with a podcast app called Google Podcasts. Go to the Google Play Store, look up Google Podcasts, and once you download the app to your phone or tablet, please make sure to subscribe to Golf Smarter for free so that every new episode is downloaded automatically. And for everyone, including Android and iOS consumers, could you please write an honest review about Golf Smarter in the Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or Google Podcast apps? Besides telling your golf buddies about Golf Smarter, your comments in the listen review section are the most effective way to let others who are looking for helpful golf content know why they should check us out. And your continued support helps us grow and continue. And I thank you for that. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, use @GolfSmarter on Twitter or Instagram, or contribute to our Golf Smarter Facebook page, or write to me directly by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com. This episode is brought to you by Modern Mammals, a company that creates new hair washing products for men. Visit modernmammals.com and use code GOLFSMARTER for 10% off. I'm a guy. I get it. Once you find a product you like, especially hair care products, you think, that's it. I'm not changing. Why would I? This works fine. Really? Fine? When is fine good enough in your life, your work, your game? Unlike the shampoo you've been using forever, Modern Mammals products don't have harsh detergents that suds up and dry out your head and hair. And unlike conditioners, they don't leave your hair limp and frizzy. Instead, they lightly clean your hair and scalp, cleansing your hair while protecting its strength and texture. But let's get back to you. Have you ever really cared about what you put in your hair? Probably not. But that's why you need to visit modernmammals.com and read the reviews that prove how well it works. And while you're there, use code GOLFSMARTER at checkout for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with the promo code GOLFSMARTER. That way, they knew we sent you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.